You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, my beautiful listeners. I'm glad you're here with me. I wanted to start with something funny to sort of set the tone, you know what I mean? These are the most funny, interesting posts I've seen online recently, and one was shared by Red Pill Bot. It said, voting is the adult version of writing a letter to Santa Claus. I'll talk more about voting later. But here's another funny post. This was Misto. He said, it's weird how everyone sleeps differently. Like, I sleep on my side, my ex sleeps with everybody, and y'all sleep on me. And this one, this is probably my favorite, posted by VVII, and I'll use the word ninjas here so as not to get clipped out of context and called a racist like Joe Rogan. That happened to him. V said this. He said, ninjas used to get caught during hide and seek and then say, I'm not playing. The F you doing under the car then? I like that one a lot because I definitely remember finding my cousin in under a pile of dirty clothes in my Nanan's house and him saying, I'm not even playing. Yeah. And what are you doing with the drawers on your head, big boy? All right, let's jump in. We're in Mexico this week, getting away from the cold. We pulled a Ted Cruz and that followed a quick getaway to the Texas Hill Country, which is beautiful at certain times of year. That's where my wife wanted to go to celebrate her birthday. So we booked a couple nights with friends in Wimberley, Texas. It's a great little Texas town. But we got out of there after just one night because we were worried the roads were going to be closed the next morning. And we didn't want to get stuck. While we were there, we checked out the Jester King Brewery. And Wimberley's just a cool little town, so we would like to go back when the weather is better. I hadn't been to the Texas Hill Country since college, probably. But we walked around in the freezing cold. I think that the wind chill was in the teens. They have a bunch of little shops. And anyway, but not here. The weather here is perfecto. You know, something I found myself doing driving around the Texas Hill Country, I pulled up songs that I hadn't listened to in 20 years, like Cher Was a Waitress at the Only Joint in Town, that kind of song. And that's Robert Earl Keane, The Road Goes On Forever, and like Jerry Jeff Walker, and just old school stuff. The first country CD I ever bought was right after I moved to Houston. I probably bought the CD in January 94. It was Tim McGraw. You remember that Don't Take the Girl song? Yeah, that was my favorite country song at the time. I was in eighth grade. Today, what I wanted to do was share some of the highlights from my favorite Scott Adams book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. It has a lot of practical wisdom. He talks about achieving success through systems and managing your energy and embracing failure. It's really a book about mindset. And you know, if I were writing a book today, and maybe this is the reason I'm so drawn to How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, if I were to write a book today, it would largely be about mindset. So I'll also give you an update on the best movie ever and how I think about talking about politics with kids, because sometimes it's unavoidable. Here are some of my favorite passages from How to Fail at Almost Everything. And I'll add commentary where I have some. All right, the first one. Every skill you acquire doubles your odds of success. Scott Adams was big on skill stacking, developing a talent stack, he called it. And he believed you don't have to be the best in one thing or even top 1% or even top 5%. He would say that if you're just good at a few different things, say top 20% at different skills, once those skills are combined, you can be deadly. You bring those skills to the marketplace and you're very valuable. And he often talked about Trump's skill stack, which would be public speaking and persuasion and marketing and negotiating and comedic timing, which they both have, Adams and Trump. I saw where Tony Hinchcliffe said that some of the funniest people in the world think that Trump is the funniest person in the world. And I think there's an argument to be made for that. But you combine all these skills, like the ones I just mentioned, and you have a serious talent stack. And Charlie Munger would call it a Lollapalooza effect when you combine all of, like, what he had was elementary worldly wisdom. He's passed too. He was 99 when he died, but Scott Adams was only 68, unfortunately. Here's the next one. Happiness is health plus freedom. I can tell you, being happy without your health is a daily battle. As the saying goes, the healthy man desires 1,000 things. The unhealthy man desires only one. And that is so true. And what makes it hard to remain cheerful despite your circumstances, related to what Adams believed, and it demonstrates his orthogonal thinking, would be, he would say that most people believe happiness is a mental process, but he believed happiness was more of a physical process. So when you're feeling down, just move your body, get moving. You know, they say if you're depressed, leave the house, regardless of what you're doing. Just running errands can elevate your mood. Go for a walk, you know, whatever it takes, just get moving. And when you can't do that, like I haven't been able to, it can be a real mind F, but you got to work through it. And he also believed, like, if you've been through some stuff, you would tell yourself that the universe owes you. Which, speaking of, there's a guy named Akira the Don. He calls them meaning waves. And it's these meaningful quotes that he does it for a few different people, but the ones I've seen are from Scott Adams. And they're awesome. Like, you'll listen to Scott Adams make a point, and it's got cool music in the background, and it's real soothing. It's awesome. It's really good work. And Adams complimented it before he passed and sent him a shout out and said that Akira Don's worthy of a follow on X. I actually tried to contact him because when I got here to Mexico, I saw that he was in the part of Mexico that we were visiting. And so I hit him up, but I didn't hear back. That's what happens when you don't have a lot of followers, I guess, right? Okay, next one. Goals are for losers. Your mind isn't magic. It's a moist computer you can program. The most important metric to track is your personal energy. So I obviously don't agree that goals are for losers. I kind of help people achieve their goals for a living. But what he's always said is that systems are better than goals, which is something that James Clear made clear in Atomic Habits. And so I've thought about this a lot because I respect Adam so much, and because I do a goals workshop with my guys that I coach. And ultimately, the conclusion I came to as I review others' goals and my own is that the system that'll be used to get there, to achieve the goal, that's part of the workshopping we do. That's what we're talking through. It's basically the first question. Okay, how are you going to do that? So I could see where a loser would set a goal, I'm going to be a millionaire, and then if he doesn't have a system to accomplish that goal, it's just sort of pie in the sky stuff. And you might say that's loser behavior. Just willy-nilly setting goals and then no plan to achieve them. Who does that? I don't know anybody who does that. By the way, if you're not a millionaire, I would recommend heeding the words of the late Jim Rohn, who said, set a goal to become a millionaire for what it will make of you to achieve it. What you become in the process is more important than what you achieve. So the optimal approach, if you're considering a new job or anything like that, the most important question to ask yourself, especially if you're one of my young guys, my young kings, start with what not to ask yourself, which is, what am I getting here? Like, what am I going to get? Jim Rohn would tell you, no, don't ask, what am I getting? Ask yourself, what am I becoming here that's going to make me better? So always be concerned more with what you're becoming, because what you're becoming is what you will attract. And that goes for opportunities with regard to jobs or relationships or money, you know, whatever it is, investments. Next one, failure always brings something valuable with it. I don't let it leave until I extract that value. Yep, you win or you learn. If you think somebody is more successful than you, they most likely have taken a lot more rejection than you, which is why probably the most valuable trait you could possibly have is that of somebody who handles rejection extremely well. Scott Adams would ask those who've been rejected, did your life get better? Like, let's say somebody had been fired. He would say, did your life get better after being fired? And almost 100% of people say, yes, my life did get a lot better after I was fired. If that guy or girl didn't want you, he would say, tell yourself it just wasn't a fit. I agree with that. Rejection is God's protection. All right, next one. Simplicity transforms ordinary into amazing. So I covered this last episode, but Scott had this amazing ability to simplify things. And I'm reminded again of something Charlie Munger said, which is just don't do stupid things. Instead, do the ordinary, more sensible things and keep at it year after year, decade after decade, which speaks to consistency, right? And by doing ordinary things well and then combining them, like having a solid skill stack, combine a few ordinary things you do well, and that's how you become extraordinary. And that's what Munger called the Lollapalooza effect. Comedians have an awesome way of turning everyday ordinary stuff, taking that and turning it into laughs. And what's more amazing than making people laugh? You know, the giver, in that sense, gets as much joy from making people laugh as the person laughing gets, I would bet, right? You both get joy. And Adams, of course, wrote humor. So what he would do is take everyday occurrences in the corporate world and turn them into arguably the best comic strip of all time. All right, next one. Good ideas have no value because the world already has too many of them. The market rewards execution, not ideas. Yeah, this is why it's long been said that you shouldn't worry about sharing your ideas. We tend to think somebody's going to steal our idea, but that rarely happens because the idea is the easy part. James Altucher talks about getting his creative mind working. What he attributes most to his success is writing 10 ideas per day. So ideas are a dime a dozen. It's the execution of the idea that's the hard part. And people aren't going to want to put the work in, more than likely. So don't worry about that. Have a bunch of ideas. All right, here's another one. You shouldn't hesitate to modify your perceptions to whatever makes you happy, because you're probably wrong about the underlying nature of reality anyway. So here he's arguing that since our perception of reality is inherently flawed, it's subjective by nature, that you may as well consciously adopt a positive mindset or a more useful mindset. He was real big on being useful, and why not make your mind, make everything. That's how I think about the past. Like, if it's useful, I'll remember it. If not, I discard it and forget it. You know, but a more useful mindset, a positive mindset, even if it seems delusional, is going to maximize your happiness and success rather than obsessing over whether you're seeing some objective truth. The way I look at it is like wondering whether somebody likes you or not, your coworkers or a love interest or somebody in your family or whoever. Why don't you just assume they do if it helps you to think that way? Because odds are you'll never know what they really think about you anyway. So it doesn't matter. You will see the inside of a coffin before you ever know what they truly think about you. You know, what they say about closed doors or behind closed doors when you're not around. So if it helps you, like as a bachelor, to think that cute girl is interested, assume that she is. You ever hang out with somebody and they're clearly talking shit about somebody that you both know? Which we probably all do to some extent. But my rule is, I am not going to say anything behind somebody's back that I wouldn't say in their presence. And that alone should keep you out of a lot of trouble. And some people aren't going to like you because you tell the truth. A lot of people don't like that. They don't want to be told the truth because it hurts. All right, next one. Pessimism is often a failure of imagination. I went back and listened to Scott Adams on Sam Harris's podcast a few weeks ago. And man, that Sam Harris might be the smartest idiot to ever live. He would bring the conversation back to climate change and Russia collusion. It's like all that time he spent meditating was wasted. It has helped him nada, nothing. It's done nothing for him. He's probably spending his days now teaching an ethics course or defensive driving. But something that Scott Adams said stood out, and it's related. He said, the economy largely operates on sentiment. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, what Trump does so well as part of his mastery of persuasion is he brings an optimism about America and the economy, especially when you're a cheerleader of the economy, it then becomes predictive or self-fulfilling. Because if you're optimistic about the country's future, you're going to want to invest in the future, which is what brings progress. The entrepreneurial types, the innovators who are optimistic enough to put their money up today for a return in the coming years, that's kind of what the economy runs on. And on the pessimistic side, I see this all the time, I'm sure you do too, where somebody will give you some absolute and it's obvious they haven't considered other angles. They lack the imagination to account for any alternative to the conclusion that they've arrived at. And they don't want to know otherwise because it hurts. And usually, I talked about this last episode, but those who know the least are the most passionate, almost without exception. Why is that? It's because emotion clouds reason. They're not trying to get to a place of understanding. They don't know or care that there's more information out there that they could consider before drawing a conclusion. They're not after the truth. They're on a team, usually the communist side. And they'll root for their team no matter what. I mean, how many times do you see a lefty friend of yours post on social media and you think, oh, it's obvious you don't have this piece of information. Like you didn't search far enough to draw a conclusion. And they're passionate enough to post, right? That's what drives them to post. But it doesn't bother them that they're posting, that they're revealing that they don't know anything. It doesn't bother them. They're on a team and they're just cheerleading the way Trump does for the economy. So either root for America, I guess, or root against them. Root against America. I always use a sports analogy for this. So if there was a flag that should have been thrown on your team, most dudes, when they're doing their Monday morning quarterbacking, they don't factor in the big penalty that should have been called on their team. And since it wasn't, it greatly benefited their team. Well, they're not going to talk about that. They're a diehard LSU fan or whatever. Naval Ravikant posted this on X this week. He said, there's no point in learning custom tools, workflows, or languages anymore. So somebody asked Grok, what then should we be learning? And here was Grok's response. It said, focus on timeless skills, critical thinking, emotional intelligence, ethics, and domain expertise in fields like science or art. Oh, so I wanted to talk about I mentioned taking a class in ethics. Like I have a buddy who got a DUI recently and he said they made him take a course on defensive driving. And I was like, oh man, that must have sucked sitting through all that. And he said, oh no, it was great. I learned how to be a better driver. Yeah, he was kidding, of course. And I said, yeah, that's like every year I renew my real estate license and you have to take 3 hours of ethics. Like, I get some people need an ethics course, but if you're already ethical, you might as well be sitting through a defensive driving course. It's just a total waste of time. All right, let's do some updates in the best movie ever. There's a lot going on. I saw where Tim Walz capitulated and called President Trump after another one of their communist foot soldiers died, unfortunately. And the whole thing is so ridiculous. As I pointed out last time, what ICE is doing was favored by every Democrat politician before Trump went into politics. And it's all on tape, which is one of the weirdest aspects of the internet and social media, where we live in the ever-present now. We consume information in our feeds, and it's all transient. It's gone the next 5 minutes, and you never see it again. We read it or we watch a video, and then it's gone. I don't know if that's playing into why these hypocrites feel like they can just be hypocrites, but the fact that they're all on tape saying we need to deport illegal aliens doesn't bother them in the slightest. They're playing a new game, I assume, because they suddenly realized they couldn't win elections anymore with the people who were here. But yeah, the Biden administration opened up the borders, let millions and millions of people in, and they want them to stay, the worst of them to stay, which is, it can only be about one thing. And I'm sure it's a coincidence that riots started in Minnesota 12 days after billions of dollars of fraud was discovered, and then the day after, their Signal group was exposed, their Signal group chat, and it was the next day that walls capitulated. Remember they tried to oust Pete Hegseth over a Signal chat? Always projecting. And that's what prompted Jazz Hands to decide he wasn't running for re-election. Isn't it something that guy did his honeymoon in communist China and then went back an estimated 15 times? He used to say 30, but that's been debunked. It was only 15. Oh, and it's been revealed that there's some Singham character, some billionaire living in Beijing who's funding much of the chaos. So hopefully they'll get to him soon. Bernie Sanders honeymooned in a communist country too. Also, have you seen a politician take to the podium? Have you ever seen this and cry after casting a vote? I can only think of one time that's happened. Maybe there have been more and I just haven't seen it. But that Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota politician, boy, Minnesota has some serious problems, huh? She voted no on providing more money for illegals and cried when she took the podium afterward, almost as if she knew what that would mean for her. I don't think she could have possibly imagined exactly what would happen to her, but it's all so awful. What I think is, as has been their way since Trump came on the scene, they constantly project. So what this clearly closeted homosexual is doing, he thinks Trump, and this is what I think he thinks. I'm not a mind reader, but just knowing how they are and their pattern of behavior, I think he thinks that Trump and his administration are going to go easy on him if he's now friendly toward them, you know, asking for help. But Republicans aren't like that. They're about law and order, kind of like a nobody is above the law kind of thing. You know, lawfare, that's a leftist thing. By the way, speaking of lawfare, one of the many eye-opening things that Sam Harris said in that podcast with Scott Adams was that the president of the United States, meaning Trump at the time, this was during his first term, he was referring to something Trump said about throwing Hillary Clinton in jail, and he just was beside himself. He couldn't believe that this was said by an American politician. He couldn't believe it. And then, of course, they actually did try to put Trump in jail, and I'm sure he's okay with that. There's one man, Joshua Lysak, who is a ghostwriter. He helped Scott Adams with some of his later books. He has said that it was the Scott Adams conversation with Sam Harris on the Waking Up podcast that cured him of his TDS. Also in the last week, Chamath Papalahapatiya, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I refer to him as Chamath for obvious reasons. He said that it was only when he watched the unedited Charlottesville video that he was cured of his TDS. I don't know if he had full-blown TDS, but he said that's when he realized that he'd been lied to, and said that a lot of people don't want to know what Trump actually said because it would show them unequivocally that they've been duped. As I've said many times on this pod, it's much easier to convince someone of a lie than it is to convince somebody that they've been lied to. So those people continue to live in their own reality, and they're okay with being lied to. Or they're just not able to discern when somebody's lying. Like I've always said, you can never get to 100%, but you can get pretty dang close. And some people just don't have those perceptive skills in their talent stack. Helen Andrews, who's the author of a book titled Boomers, The Men and Women Who Promised Freedom and Delivered Disaster, which I haven't read, but it's on my list. She said this about wokeness. She said, everything we call woke, empathy over rationality, safety over risk, cohesion over competition, inclusion over free speech, is just the natural outcome of institutions becoming majority female since the 1970s. She points to surveys saying that 2/3 of men prioritize free speech, while around 2/3 of women prioritize an inclusive society. So men lean on ethics, the ethics of justice, such as rules and facts and documents that have stood the test of time, for 250 years. Whereas women are more ethics of caring, which is context, relationships, emotions. And the example she gave was James Damore. You remember him? He was fired. He was the software engineer fired from Google, not because of any facts he got wrong, but rather because it made women feel bad. And then she mentioned the Kavanaugh hearings, where the masculine side demanded evidence and the feminine side focused on, well, she's crying, and used her little girl voice, I might add. Christine with the hyphenated last name. Proving once again that if a man without a pair gets married, he will soon find that his wife, in fact, does have a pair of last names, at least. All right, Miss Andrews, her take was that when women predominate politics and institutions, they will tilt towards subjective feelings over objective rules, even if many women reject it, since it needs to be said for dummies out there that there are exceptions. Yeah. What I just shared with you right there was courtesy of Camus on X, a great follow. If you're looking for good follows, that's where I saw that. One of the top comments on the video was a meme of some awful, it said, nobody imagined modern firearms when writing the Second Amendment, to which the man replied, nobody imagined modern women when writing the 19th. You remember the line from the Jack Nicklaus movie I've shared with you? How do you write women so well? And he says, I think of a man and I take away reason and accountability. Yeah, the more feminized is society, the less reason and accountability there will be. Remember how many people Biden fired? Of course, he's going to fire people in the first few days, but he fired a few people for being too conservative during his term, like the Social Security Administrator or the Commissioner of the SSA, who was a little too anti-union for Biden's taste, or whoever was making decisions on his behalf using the pen. But no Democrat, I don't think he let go of any Democrats, as far as I know. There's so much going on in Minnesota. Ilhan Omar was attacked by a man with a syringe containing an unknown substance. This was the day after her multi-million dollar winery was exposed. I looked at some of the details on that because I was interested. It said, well, it looked legit to me, first off. That is, other than the winery, they didn't have any wine, so that was probably the first red flag. And it mysteriously went from making no money to making millions and millions of dollars, starting, I want to say it was 12 days after she was elected to Congress. And then overnight, the winery disappeared. Like, you couldn't even find it in the Wayback Machine, so the website was deleted and everything. So I'm sure that's all on the up and up. And that the attack on her wasn't staged. Somalis aren't exactly known for scams, am I right? But for every kid who is wearing an eye patch on Halloween, you have to guess whether they're Jack Sparrow or Somalian. Former comedian Jimmy Kimmel was seen crying once again, this time for the two quote-unquote legal observers who were killed while antagonizing federal law enforcement. How about the way communists invent words and phrases, or redefine words? Notice they call these organized anti-ICE agitators legal observers. What constitutes a legal observer? Wouldn't that title be more fitting of someone observing illegal behavior? Like, what is Nick Shirley in this context? Is he an illegal observer because he observed illegal behavior at the Somali daycares with no kids? I don't know. Other examples of words or phrases they invented in recent years would be equity, of course, which was redefined to suit a communist imperative. Cisgender is another one where I don't even know what they're trying to do there. I'm not even sure what it means. Let me look it up. I assume it was just created to ostracize normal people. Cisgender means you claim to be the gender you were assigned at birth. Yeah. Human. Cisgender is another word for normal human. But since commies lack the capacity for empathy, what they have to do is wait for their opinion to be assigned and then try the performative kind of empathy I'm talking about. That the theater kids and the wokesters can, or they're one and the same, but that they can cheer for Jimmy Kimmel's audience doesn't laugh anymore. They cheer like they're at a political rally. I hate to say this because I don't think I'll probably be accused of indoctrinating my kids with politics when they're little. And that is never what I am. I don't try to do that. But I'll tell you, my daughter has started to ask when we're watching the news if the person on the screen is a bad guy. And what I tell her is, if they're lying, obviously, then they're a bad guy, which I think is fair game with kids. I don't have any problem teaching kids that lying makes you a bad guy. And when she gets older, she might ask, well, Daddy, how do you know they're lying? And I would share. How can you tell? But of course, you can never be 100% sure. But learning early on how to tell when somebody's trying to deceive you, I believe that is a huge skill to have. And I'm sure the discussion would probably turn into a broader conversation about baselining and body language and microfacial expressions, why some people are hyperbolic and they can still be directionally correct, which is what Trump is a lot, and why somebody might exaggerate. What are alternative facts? I can think a lot of things we would talk about. Is there such thing as lying during a negotiation? Why you shouldn't take one aspect of what somebody says or does and run with it? Because like once an isolated move, once something is isolated, it then needs to be combined with other factors. There can't just be one thing. You say, oh, they're lying. It'll just increase the likelihood that you are correct, that they are lying. You know, as close to 100% as you can get is the goal. And an example of this would be Omar recently, where the guy, right before he stood up to attack her, she gave him a glance as if she had just said the magic words that were to serve as the prompt for the guy to do his thing. You wouldn't take that one thing and say, oh, this is staged. No, you'd have to combine it with everything else. Like, if somebody fears for their safety, what is the natural reaction? You'd move away from the attacker because you're in danger, so you want to avoid the danger. An unknown substance was just sprayed on you. You might even look to see what was sprayed on you and ask people, what do you think? But if your first instinct as a little woman would be to run after your attacker and raise your fist, come on. Nothing about the way she reacted indicated she was in any danger whatsoever. These people are actors, and I believe there's going to be a federal investigation. What they do is put on theater productions, the most successful of which was J6. I saw a meme one time. This is terrible. It was a picture of Omar in her hijab, and it said, my finger when the TP is too thin. So now I think about that every time I see her face. You know, that sticks with you. And it's a shame because she is a good-looking woman for a Somalian. But it's like Pocahontas or low-energy Jeb, what Scott Adams would call the linguistic kill shot. It sticks with that person, and you can't help but think about it. What else is going on in Minnehaha or Minnesota? My buddy Scalzer used to call Chicago Chiclagla, and that stuck. Maybe I don't know who used to call Minnesota Minnehaha. Maybe my dad. I don't know. But Minnehaha actually means waterfall in the land of 10,000 lakes. That Alex Pretty fella was killed, unfortunately, tragically. And it was only a matter of time before the image of him in the media was stellar. You know, he had to fit the image they wanted to portray, that he was this warm, caring nurse, attractive man. But that image was tarnished in about 48 hours. Which, remember they did that with Trayvon. Remember they put him in an Abercrombie and Fitch, or they had him, a picture of him in an Abercrombie and Fitch shirt from when he was 13, not the thug-looking dude he was at 17. But 48 hours, that's how long it took with the other legal observer that was tragically killed. It took about 48 hours for that body cam video to be released and debunk some of the BS, but some people are going to stick to it regardless. But with Pretty, it was a video released of him spitting on law enforcement. And he then kicked the taillights and the brake lights off of the back passenger side of the vehicle. And he was begging the agents to assault him. And you can see the gun on his hip. So that dude, he clearly wasn't in his right mind. You know, one of the first things they teach you in concealed carry class is that if you have a gun, you let law enforcement know. And this is something they harp on. It's repeated over and over. It said as much as, if you shoot, you better be shooting to kill. Like, you don't do like the dummies at CNN and say, well, why don't you just shoot him in the knee? Yeah, it doesn't work like that. If you're not shooting to kill, if you're not aiming for the biggest target, which is the middle of the chest, then you're not shooting at all. And if you're pulled over, the first thing you do is show the officer your CHL. Greg Gutfeld tweeted this. He said, missing in the video of Pretty spitting on the agent and smashing SUV's brake lights. Is the police arresting him for unlawful acts like assault, which would have altered future events? His family will have quite a lawsuit against the city, the mayor, and the state. He's being tongue-in-cheek. He's saying that the family could sue because arresting him probably would have saved his life. But the city and the mayor and the state, they wanted martyrs for the cause, obviously. And they got him. Greenland. Let's talk about Greenland. Something I saw that was interesting the other day, and I'll share this picture in the show notes. It was a map of the different ballistic missile sites in Russia, these different locations in Russia where they have ballistic missiles. And it showed the path that these missiles would take to get to DC. And it wasn't due west that they'd be flying or due east. It was over the globe. So on a few of my international flights, you know how on the little screen on the back of your seat in front of you, you can track the flight path and get the time for when you're going to arrive? Well, a few times I've noticed that we were flying over Greenland. And that's because often the quickest path to get to where you want to go in this sphere we live on is up and over it. Well, when you look at the map that I'm going to post in the show notes, you'll see what I'm talking about. Greenland is this massive piece of land or ice that sits between us, America and Russia. So when Trump says this is a national security thing, it'll make a lot of sense when you see this map I'm talking about. Something else in the best movie ever, and probably the biggest news, the FBI raided, or served a search warrant, to be more accurate, I guess. They went into an election hub in Fulton County, Georgia, and seized all the 2020 election ballots and voter rolls and ballot images. Now, this raid, I believe, came the very next day after Coomer. Coomer was the Dominion voting machines exec. He admitted in a deposition to international involvement with the machines. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that. It's kind of early. These are preliminary reports. But what I think is 2026 is going to be a year of revelation. And much of it may be time for the midterms, much like the Trump tariff checks that should be coming in to some folks in America. But when are we going to get rid of these voting machines? Like, aside from it gives people a reason to think elections are rigged. So what purpose do they serve? They don't save time. They don't save money. They don't make for more accurate count. I mean, what is the point? Will one of the revelations of 2026 be that illegals have been voting for years? I've seen where they have said they don't want, what did they say? Don't ICE better not be at polling stations. I think they're trying to pass a bill or something, so that doesn't happen. Why would they need that bill? But yeah, maybe they have been voting for years. You know, the commies long said that illegals weren't receiving welfare benefits. That definitely turned out not to be true. I saw where the election officials in Fulton County have already held a presser, where one of the guys says that the election was 2020. That was years ago. It's time to move on. And I'm sure that makes sense to this fella, this African-American gentleman who took to the microphone. But I tell you what, if that dude's ever invited on Dateline because one of his kids, something's happened to one of his kids, like, God forbid, one of his kids was murdered, is he going to be like, I don't want to see any evidence. My kid's already dead. Let's move on. Are we going to acquire Greenland and then send Somalis there? That would suck for Minneapolis, because Somalis contribute so much, am I right? So it'd be a huge loss for Minnesota, I know, losing all that productivity, because I believe it's 20% of them. It's like one in every five Somalis they're not being supported by the taxpayer. So it could be a big blow. But who better to build a metropolis in Greenland? Send Somalis there to create a thriving society, a little Singapore on ice. And then if needed to intervene in a conflict with Russia, for example, they could just be conscripted and they'd be closer to the action. I saw where Germany, it was revealed that the chancellor there, Mertz, I believe is his name, he has said that he can't conscript German residents for their army because they're afraid that it would be majority Muslim and they don't trust Muslims with weapons. Isn't that something? So things are changing fast 100 years from now. Europe, I'm pretty sure, will be, or at least Western Europe, will be Islamic. Oh, and Don Lemon has been arrested. Isn't it wild how many race communists are married to white people? And not just Lemon, but Kamalama Lama Lama, the, who else? The lady who looks like Thinning TP. Once you see it, that's all you see. They're married to white people while hating white people. Is that a form of self-loathing? How does that work? Before I conclude this episode, I want to read something to you that Naval Ravikant said that I thought was excellent. It's about time and the value of time. It's really simply put, and I thought it was a good way to conclude this episode. It says, value your time. It's all you have. It's more important than your money. It's more important than your friends. It's more important than anything. Your time is all you have. Do not waste your time. That's all I got for you today. I will check back in with you soon. I can never gauge exactly when the next episode is going to be or when I'm going to have a guest because I'm still trying to find a cure for what ails me, which is neck problems. Thank you for tuning in. If I can do anything for you, let me know. If you enjoyed the episode, let a friend know. Chat back at you soon. God bless y'all. Bye-bye.